Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode. Hi, welcome to Rue. So Monica and I are both the eldest child in our families. And today we're going to talk about this because we all know that in South Asian families, the order in which you're born certainly has an impact on your personality. So we're going to unpack all of this, and just so that you have another perspective as well, we are going to be joined by Monica's younger sister, Priya. Welcome to the show, Priya.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes.
Yeah, you're lucky I let you come on.
Wow. Wow. I mean,
it starts already. All right. So Monica, why don't you guys share your family dynamic?
Okay, so, you know, I didn't really realize how the order of your birth or the responsibilities that are placed on you as a child really shape who you are, and also the way you look at memories, until as we got older and we would reflect on certain situations and moments in life, and my brother and Priya would have totally different recollections of how something happened, how it impacted, you know, funny, sad, good, whatever it was. And I would be like, what are you talking about? That's not how it went, or that's not how it was. And it took me a while to realize how whatever happens, you know, it's through the lens of that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the longest, I would always be like, well, they were younger. They didn't have great memory. That's why, you know, like they don't remember. They never paid attention. That's how they've always been. But it's really your personality and how you perceive things. And yeah, that's shaped on the different roles that are put on you as a child.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. So growing up, what did you feel like? Did you feel like you were given a certain set of responsibilities that you thought were maybe unfair?
I wouldn't say unfair. So my mom does explain that I naturally gravitated towards wanting to do everything on my own. I was very independent. I was her first child. So she always wanted to hold me, feed me, do those things. And she's like, you wouldn't let me. And then she's like, then your brother came along and you just naturally gravitate towards wanting to help out with him. Then Priya was born. She's actually my cousin, but we were all raised together as a family. So mm-hmm. She's always been my baby sister. And we're about 7.5 years apart, almost 8 years. So, you know, naturally, again, I always gravitate towards wanting to take care of her. So those responsibilities weren't put on me. But then I don't know, sometimes when you think back, like, was it me seeing like family is busy, you know, parents, as immigrant parents, they have all these responsibilities. Like, should I come and step in and take that role? Now, we have an older cousin who also lived with us. He's 1.5 years older than me. So he was technically the older child, but responsibilities weren't always placed upon him, which was at that age, I remember. So I was always vocal. So I would be like, well, if Leon doesn't do it, why do I have to do it? You know, well, if Leon gets away with it, why do I? So him and I, we had very similar personalities. So as much as we got along, we also butt heads a lot too.
Yeah.
Because I was never afraid to stand up for myself. And, you know, neither was he. But he always had a soft spot for me. So if he saw that if I got mad or upset, he would be like, okay, fine. You know, but yeah. I don't know how that role, like our two strong personalities played for my brother and Priya. Because when we talked to them about it, it's completely different. So maybe, Priya, you can share your experience now.
I will say, like, growing up, I thought it was normal what we were doing, our relationship, everything that we were doing. And then as I got older, I would talk to my friends about it. I'd be like, wait, so you guys didn't do that? And I realized how much our families were different. And I think it was a few years ago when I finally, like, really appreciated you. Because for one time, we were actually going to the same school, me, Monica, and Leon.
Yeah.
So I was in like pre-K or JK. So like,
Yeah, it was your first year. So it's called pre-K in the US, but in Canada, it's called JK. So junior kindergarten.
So I was in that and it was only like a half day course. So in the afternoon at lunchtime, Monica had to pick me up and take me home. Instead of enjoying her lunch with her friends. Remember, we're 7.5 years apart. So if I'm 4, Monica's what?
Yeah, I was in grade 6 then when you started school.
You know, so you want to hang out with your friends. You're a teenager. Yeah. And this poor girl, her entire life. And the thing is, I was an easygoing child.
Mm-hmm. No.
I used to get really annoyed and angry. So I would go to the office to wait for her because her lunch started like maybe a half an hour later. And just because I had to wait half an hour, I would get so upset. I would take off all my clothes and just strip.
Yeah. Or her hair would be like all over the place.
Uh-huh. And then this poor woman, girl, has to come in, now dress her baby sister, use up more of her lunch, and then walk. And we went to school on 2nd Street, and we lived on 8th Street. And she would walk all that distance, drop me off, and then not only drop me off because they're not in his home, she'd make sure I ate, and she's eating herself, and then rushing back to school.
Wow.
Could you imagine having your like 6th grader do that?
Yeah. And the thing is, at that time, honestly, like it wasn't even, I never even thought of it in like as a hardship because I just, it was nice. It was something I had to do. And actually, you see, you forgot, we used to pick up Sunny too along the way. So my brother was going to a different school at the time. So he was fourth grade. So I'd have her and then sometimes she'd have me pick her up.
Yeah, they were saying, like, I walked on maybe like one block. I'd be like, nope, I'm done. And I'd give her my backpack, like, carry me.
Yeah.
See, I was very pampered.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until like much later. And I was like, oh my God, Monica, like, that's the time. Like, I was in the 6th grade, you're telling me to go hang out with like my younger cousin. I'm like, no, I want to be with my friend. So, like.
And Leon could have done it. We never thought of that, right? Leon could have done it, but he didn't put it on him.
The elder boys don't get the responsibility as much as the girl gets it.
You're right. In South Asian communities, definitely the eldest daughter.
He was doing football and like, he was in band. He was like, oh, Leon's busy with sports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, why can't Monica be busy with sports too?
Mm-hmm.
No, Monica's picking up the two youngest and doing all that.
Wow. So, you know, this makes so much sense because Monica and I have known each other for what, 15 years now?
Yeah.
So we've been friends for most of our adult lives, basically. Mm-hmm. So hearing this perspective from you, from when she was a child, it certainly makes so much sense because I would say that in our group of friends, Monica is like the caretaker. She is, she goes above and beyond to help people out. It's just in her nature.
But you have to wonder, is it her nature or was she just made to be this way because of her environment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Being the eldest, she saw all of her immigrant parents are working. Her grandma was not like, you know, she was there, but she was still older.
Yeah.
And Monica realized, hey, I have to pick up the slack. So like, and she warmed into this like more of a nurturing, caring person, even though she may have already been, but now she's taking on more responsibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I wonder if that makes you more independent and responsible too. Because so my son's going to be in fourth grade. I wonder in the next 2 years, I can throw all that onto him, you know? Like, yeah. I do feel like all the situations we were put in, it creates resilience. We live in an area where our children do not walk to school. We used to walk to school and we lived in Toronto, actually. So it was a very busy area. It was the main, like the cars, everything. So we weren't in the suburbs. We were walking in the main city as kids, back and forth to school alone. And that made us much smarter, right? In the sense of safety, street smart, all that. Yeah. And I remember after dropping you off, doing all the responsible things, going back to school, I'd actually walk back through the alleyway. Go to the school, you know, to go back because it was more fun. It was adventurous. And I remember one day, actually, they were, I guess, redoing the sewages underneath the ground, like the city sewers. And I walked through those sewages that they were going to install, like those huge drums. Like that's, they still had to be installed. So they were above ground. But I walked through all that. Like
I'm picturing you actually walking through just shit.
No. They had to be installed still. They're outside, but it's a construction site. You know, they're huge. It's like these like cylindrical systems. And it's just, I made it fine.
Yeah. I feel like when I think back to my childhood, so when I was in the 6th grade, I guess you can say, we were in Brooklyn and we lived a few blocks away from school. Mm-hmm. So I used to walk home with my younger siblings.
Yeah.
And I don't think it ever even dawned on me that I was responsible for their safety.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, I don't think that we took it as that. Yes. I think we just sort of, we did what had to be done.
Yeah.
So, you know, now when I think about, okay, we were in Brooklyn and we weren't necessarily in the safest part of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And here we are, you know, I was like, what, 10? Mm-hmm. So 10 years old, I'm responsible for my sister and my brother, and we're walking home. Mm-hmm. But I think it was a different time.
Yeah.
I think back then you could do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think parents thought so much about, oh, this responsibility that I'm putting on, is it fair to the kids or not? It was implied.
It was implied. It was very much the norm. We weren't the only family that was doing it. We had a friend who would walk home alone as well. She didn't have siblings. Some of them did have siblings. And I remember having keys to the house in third grade, coming up a building, unlocking the door ourselves, right? And then honestly, even being home alone for like at least an hour or two at times, right? All the time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because you know, all the parents said was, don't open the door. We have the keys. Don't answer the phone.
You don't remember this, Priya? I see you shaking your head.
Yeah.
I was never left alone.
Yeah.
But then when we moved out of Toronto, we moved to Mississauga to a condo. I was eight. I wasn't allowed to go in the elevator by myself. Like, my mom was so scared. She would come down to the lobby and meet me, walk me to school. Like, I got way more sheltered.
Yes. I was going to say that. I remember because
we're not even in the busy area anymore. This is like, my school was maybe like a 5-minute walk, and it was like nice suburbs. You know, everyone's going. I still got walked to school until like the fifth grade, even then. And until like I was 11, I wasn't allowed to go in the elevator by myself. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't want me walking from our apartment condo to where the garbage chute, which was on the other side, because she's like, you could get kidnapped.
Oh, my God. And I used to walk all around by myself.
Yeah. As time has gone on, I feel like we've started to shelter our kids more and more. Mm-hmm. And they are afraid. I mean, our kids are afraid to just, you know, if they cross the street by themselves, they think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, at one time, we were in the backyard, and I was like, I just need to go get something from upstairs. They came with me, and I was getting upset. I was like, you are in your backyard. You are safe. I'm going to close this gate. They followed me. And Bria, you remember, here's another one of the things I feel like was different with us growing up versus you, even though we were in the same household. We used to go out and play by ourselves all the time. Like, you know that, right? Like, we would be playing outside on the street, everything, like doing whatever it was in Toronto all alone. But then you weren't really allowed that. But then also, I feel like we kind of were closer in age, like me, Leon, and Sunny. So we had a group almost. Whereas with you, you kind of, since you were on the younger side from everyone, maybe because you were left by yourself, that your mom probably didn't feel safe letting you do these things on your own.
I think so. I think just being the baby didn't help, right? Having that huge age gap. Even when I was like, I'm ready to play with you guys, you were like, no, she's still too small.
Yeah.
And then our moms and everyone are thinking, oh, she's too small, right? Let's just put her on. We'll just keep her with us. And it's like,
yeah,
you're not small.
Yeah, I think we have a hard time seeing the younger sibling as an adult. Mm-hmm. We tend to always think of the younger sibling as a baby. Mm-hmm. I kid you not, my mom-in-law called, I happened to catch her, you know, she was on the phone, she was talking to someone. This is when he's getting married and he's in his 30s. And she goes, yeah, so my baby son is getting married. And baby son is 6'2", you know, big guy. You know, and it was just so funny to hear that. But I will also say that because you view the younger sibling as such, that you don't put that responsibility on that child as much either.
Yeah.
And it does, to a certain extent, affect how we are. I don't know about you, Monica, but I know that my siblings would say that I happen to be uptight. Mm-hmm. That I don't have as much fun, that I'm not as adventurous. And I mean, I think I'm fine. I think I do have fun. But to them, like, they're much more adventurous. You know, like, my sister, she'll go bungee jumping. She'll go, I mean, she's done all these adventurous things. Mm-hmm. And I've always been like the type where I'm like, I can't even go on a roller coaster.
You know? And like, I know they've mentioned it. And I'm always like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, I don't feel that way. But they have said, they're like, oh, you always follow the conventional way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, that's the word they've used.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you've just, and you know, I don't know whether that was me or just because you are the first born as a first generation immigrant child, and you just do as you're told or as what you see.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of seeing my dad's cousins growing up. So kind of used them as a source of guidance, you know, like, oh, well, they went to university for this. They, you know, they married at this age. They did that. It was like good examples mm-hmm. that set. And it was definitely the very conventional way of living my life.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and I just always thought, I was like, well, I'm still having fun along the way, but completely different to what, how they view.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very true. Like mm-hmm. Same thing. I had like this path, like, okay, yeah. I'm going to right out of school. I'm going to go to college. Once I graduate from college, like I want to be getting married within a year or two. And, mm-hmm. you know, once I get married, like I want to have kids at a certain age. It was like very much ingrained. Whereas yeah. like, you know, and it was also like, for me, it was like, I have to marry within the culture. Mm-hmm. I have to make sure the person I marry is educated. Yeah. And, you know, whereas like my sister married outside of the culture. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's kind of like, you know, for her, she just, I feel like she was almost free to like test out her wings. Mm-hmm. Whereas yeah. like I, whether it was explicitly told to me or not, I felt like the family's honor depends on me.
Yeah.
And I have to be like a good example mm-hmm. for my younger siblings, you yeah. know?
Right.
So we know as the eldest child, there's this weight that we have on our shoulders. And I think we've discussed a little bit about how it impacts our personalities later on. So apparently Monica and I are both uptight people, but
yeah.
But anyway, so I want to get into a little bit about like what it means to be the middle child in a Desi household, because I think my sister ended up with the classic middle child syndrome. And this is a story about what not to do. So what I'm about to share, as a parent, you do not do this. So in my family, my dad made it abundantly clear that I was his favorite child. He would just say it. And I obviously was the closest to my dad, loved my dad. This is one of the things I would argue with him about, because even to me as a child, I did not like being told you're my favorite in front of my siblings and seeing their faces. But I think our parents from that generation would make these comments and didn't really think of the effect that those comments would have. And it's almost like a theme, a central theme in South Asian cultures, where we make a lot of harmless comments that are actually very quite harmful. So my dad, you know, like I said, and it's also probably because I was the oldest, he had a lot more time with me before my sister came along. And when you have the second child enter the picture, as a parent, you just generally, you have less time because you're busy with two kids now. And also, I think the fact that I look just like my dad might have had something to do with it. But my sister comes along and my mom did the best that she could to raise us both very similarly. And then my brother came along and he's not only the youngest, but he's a boy. So you have two girls, and now you have one who's a different gender and is the youngest. So I feel like you baby your youngest child no matter what, even if it's a boy or girl. But in his case, because she already had two of us, two daughters, it became even more of a, you know, special treatment that he would get because you're my baby. You're also a boy. So he was showered with all this love and attention from our mom. And my sister felt like she just sort of was in the middle. Dad loved me the most. Mom loved my brother, Roop. And my sister felt like she was just sort of forgotten. And I think that has had an impact on her throughout her entire life. And it's very difficult for us to try to put things into perspective because, you know, I'll tell her, all the time, like, no, mom and dad love us equally. You know, mom, especially mom, I don't think she ever outright said like, oh, you know, Roop is my favorite or anything like that. And I don't think she has favorites, to be honest. I think she loves us all equally. But we have to be so mindful of the things that we say, because when you're in the middle, you're kind of like, yeah, you're sort of forgotten anyway, even though intentional or not. But then when you make these comments, it doesn't help. My sister was 2 years old, maybe three. And we were still in India at that time. And my grandma was in Vancouver. She was living there. And so she came and she visited. My mom was busy with household chores and whatnot. My grandma, this is the story she told my sister a few years later. She was like, you know, I came to the house and you were in your crib. You were just crying. Nobody was paying any attention to you. And I came, I picked you up. You were so hungry. I fed you a banana, but you were still so hungry. You ended up eating a dozen bananas. Now, this doesn't make any sense at all, because a 2 or 3 year old, first of all, cannot actually eat a dozen bananas. But if you're trying to show that you really love this child, don't throw anybody else under the bus, you know? You know? So my sister, that stuck with her. So all these years, you know, she's been like, yeah, like nobody cared about me. Even when I try to talk to her and I tell her, as an adult now with kids of her own, like, listen, you know, you love all your kids equally. And, you know, it was physically impossible for you to eat 12 bananas. Of course, you weren't that hungry. It still sticks with her and she still feels it to this day. I would have loved to actually have her on to get her perspective, maybe another time. But I do feel like it's shaped who she is, because even to this day, I think she's always kind of felt like whatever she does isn't good enough, or it doesn't matter anyway, because Jyoti is the one who like our dad admired. And then Roop is the baby. He's the youngest. And then I'm just sort of in the middle. I wanted to share it because I definitely wish she didn't have this dynamic. And I guess my hope in sharing this is that whoever is listening, if you do have more than two kids, definitely make sure that you go out of your way to spend time with that middle child and give them the attention and the love that they do deserve, because it will come back in their adulthood. And these are things that we experience in our childhood that we don't forget very easily. So having said that, I do want us to move on to the perspective of the youngest sibling. So Priya, this is where you come in. Now, you tell us what it was like, and please give us all the dish about Monica.
Oh, I got so much.
This is going to be unfiltered. Do not worry. It's okay. You do not need to be afraid. You're not the baby anymore. I can't beat you up.
When she says that, that means be afraid. There's this like devilish look she gets when she'll look at me, and I'm like, yep, that means I have to stop talking now.
Well, she physically cannot do anything to you because you do have a several hundred miles distance between you two.
That is true. I will say, like, obviously I was very much more appreciative of what Monica did for me as I got older, and I got to see it when I was her age. They're like, oh my God, I wouldn't want to do this. So I became more appreciative of it. But growing up, yeah, I did resent Monica a bit. And even Sunny, but it was not because like I was jealous or anything. It was because I was always getting compared. Mm. So when I started school, it was like, well, Monica got an A. You know, she got all A's in school. You need to do better. You have to be like Monica. Okay, cool. So I was working extra hard. Like I got a tutor. You know, I struggled in some courses. I was the worst in math and science. And I would be like, they were like, you know, Monica's really smart in math and science. You need to be like Monica. Right. But that's not helping me learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone's brain is different, right? Like there are things that you're great at that I couldn't do.
Put me in an arts program. I was great. I excelled in it. But it was always like, no, that's not what we find value in.
Yeah.
It was weird because by the time I was about to go to high school, Leon had dropped out, right? So he was considered the black sheep of the family. And other than him, everyone I knew, like all of our cousins, had gone to university. Right? And Monica was starting university, studies in high school. So it was like, And I wanted to go to like an arts thing. And they were like, no, you have to do academic courses in high school, which is like to go to university. So being doing only university prep courses. Mm-hmm. When I talked about wanting to drop math or science, it was these huge battles because Monica was doing like, what was it, chemistry or pharmaceutical studies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. They were like, Monica's, did you see what Monica's studying?
Yeah.
Right. So I was constantly being compared. And then I remember being like 15. I was like, I want to go on a date. And they were like, Monica never went on a date. You can't do this.
Yeah.
And that was the first time where they were like, no, 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 we're going to find a guy. You, and we'll like, you'll have an engagement and it'll be an arranged marriage.
Mm.
That was the first time they told me that. And I think I went upstairs and I cried. And I cried.
Yeah.
And I came back hours later and my eyes were puffy. I'm like, Mom, I'm never getting married. Because I didn't want an arranged marriage. Because yeah. I didn't yeah. understand the concept. I was like, you want me to marry a stranger that you're mm-hmm. picking?
Mm-hmm.
At 15, yeah. it blew my mind about this whole concept of arranged marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, anytime I wanted to do something, I realized it was always going to be compared to Monica if I told my family. Yeah. So then it was like, I'm just not going to tell you guys anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, I think I was 16 when I started to just be like, all right, I'm doing things my way.
Yeah.
I think I just realized at that point, at 16, I realized it was better to do something and ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission and not be able to do it.
Oh my gosh. You just reminded me of something my sister had once said. See, you guys, younger siblings do think alike because my sister at one time said that to me. She's like, you know, it's much, much easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
And it's funny because the same concept is what I do at work. Like if I find something that works better, I'm going to do it. And then hey, if it blows up, I will apologize.
Yeah.
It's now a model I've had. I'm like, I'm just gonna do it and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So I do feel like I have a tendency to be a bit more reckless and careless with decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And I am much more impulsive. I'm like, I'm not gonna think this through.
That's also because you weren't allowed to, like, you wanted to go and seek advice and ask for permission and see if what you were doing was right or wrong or what you should do, but you weren't given that chance to have conversations.
No, it was either you were going to be shamed, you're going to be compared, or you're just going to get a lecture that this isn't what we were supposed to do.
Yeah. And then you end up applying that in your whole life because then you're like, doesn't matter what I do, you're just not even going to agree with me.
Exactly.
Or to care to listen to. So why even bother?
Like, I wanted to wear dresses when I was like 13. You know, you get body hair.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who's fair skin with dark hair, mm-hmm. it's more noticeable. I remember I wore shorts and I got bullied the first day. I came home and I was like, I'm shaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge fight that happened between me and my dad got involved, even saying that you shouldn't shave because you're going to sexualize yourself.
What?
I didn't even understand that concept, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just wanted to fit in.
Yeah.
It was nothing about me trying to like sexual, like what?
Mm-hmm.
So that when I heard that, it was like, wait, what does this mean? So then it was like, I'm now thinking about everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't stop me. No, I went into the bathroom. I got a razor. I started shaving. I was bleeding everywhere. There was just blood in the whole bathroom.
What? How did you shave?
No one had taught me, right, Monica? I didn't see her. So all I did was I took a razor and I went dry. Uh-huh. And I'm like going in my skin and I didn't even do it in the tub. So like, the floor is covered in blood. And then I ruined all the white towels they had.
God.
It was weird because like I did this, even though they had said they didn't want me to shave, right? So I still did it. And I think they realized at that point I was stubborn. So they were like, we should give her the tools she needs so she can do it safely and not be bleeding everywhere and cutting herself.
Yeah.
So like, immediately the next day I was taken to Shoppers, like, or whatever clinic or CVS pharmacy, right? Where it was like, these are the razors, these are the shower gels. Mom was like, call Monica. She'll teach you how to shave. So I was like, okay. So I called Monica and I was like, so how do I shave? And she's like, I don't know. You just go up your leg. So helpful, Monica. Thank you. And I get it. You know what I mean? Like she's in university. She really going to help her little sister try to like shave right now. Like it's exam season. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it was weird. And then like, yeah, so a lot of my stuff was always being compared to Monica and then, or even like Leon, right? It would be like, if you don't do good in school, either you end up like Monica, you go to university, you're getting a degree, or you're going to end up like Leon. Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Right? So it wasn't always the comparison to like the good child. It was always, you could also be compared to the bad one too.
Yeah.
And then it was like, and then there was always part of me, they're like, you know, everyone's always going to think that you're going to become towards the black sheep. So you need to prove them extra hard. So they were tougher on me. And then they were like, yeah, that's why we don't let you date, because we don't want you distracted. We don't want you this. And I was like, you can do it all, though, in moderation, right? Like, wouldn't you prefer it if you had known who I was with and where I was at when I'm 16 versus me lying to you and being with on a date that you don't know where I am?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I think is so important to discuss in our community is that, you know, you can't turn a blind eye on kids dating.
No,
kids are dating. They're, you know, it's a big part of their lives now. And I think you bring a really good point. You would rather know who your child is with, where they're at, than to forbid it. And then your child is out there doing it anyway. But now you have no idea where your child is and who they're with. We all know as teenagers, we're not necessarily the best judge of character.
Yeah. Would you not rather have like your child bring the person they're going to go on a date with? You can actually meet them so you kind of know who they are.
Yeah.
Right? So you're like, okay, now I know who my kid's hanging out with versus my kid's with a stranger that I don't know because they're hiding things from me.
And it's not out of sight, out of mind.
And
you
then
know?
The other thing what really upset me was, so when I went to university, I did my English degree. I graduated at 21. The first thing I got asked was, so when are you getting married?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I remember looking at them and I was like, to who? I mean, you didn't want me dating because you needed me to focus.
Yeah.
And now you're asking, when am I getting married?
Yeah.
Where am I supposed to find a person when you didn't want me to date anyone?
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? It's not like they're just going to pop up and be like, ooh, here's your husband.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. We hear that a lot, actually, that when it's your age to actually find someone, when you're going through college or whatnot, you're discouraged from dating. They want you 100% focused on studies. But then once you graduate, it's like, okay, well, now we want you to get married. But now, you know, if you listen to your parents and you truly didn't date, now you have nobody that you can bring home and say, okay, I'm going to marry this guy, you know?
Because you're like, hey, look, I had a lot of potential suitors when they were in my program, but now I didn't go that way. So now how am I supposed to find, how am I supposed to date someone like online? Like it was such a weird concept, especially back then there wasn't even online dating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then I'm getting told, oh, we'll just get you arranged marriage. Like Monica had.
Oh,
and I
my
was like,
gosh.
I don't want that though.
Yeah.
Not really anything wrong. It's like, I, you know, but at this point, like I knew now Jiju, I knew Monica, like I knew she was happy and I was like, this is great, but I never thought I could see myself with that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did like find my now husband, when we were dating, that was another big issue I was worried about because he was Eastern European. So now, not only am I dating in secret, but I'm 23 at this point. I'm dating a white person. Right? And they want me, and Monica got married at 24. You have to understand.
Yeah.
So I'm already pushing the boundaries. And it was always just being compared, right? And then, I mean, like, yeah, granted, like, I brought him home. There was a lot of fights about whether they approved or not. And I think I said the one thing to them. And after that, they never said anything, which was because my dad said, he's like, what are you going to do if we don't approve? And I looked him right in the eye and I was like, I don't care. I'm going to marry him either way. You can be a part of my life or not. That's up to you. And after that, they were like, oh, she's serious. Oh, we don't like this. Okay. And then it was like, we're going to accept it. And then I realized, I'm like, I feel like I had more of a voice and I was more comfortable saying things and confronting them that like Monica didn't really get the chance to do.
I will say that as a younger sibling, you definitely have the leeway to be able to do that, you know?
Yes. To throw those little hissy fits of saying like, I won't talk to you if you don't do it my way. You know, I don't think that you'd get away with it.
Yeah. So I would say what we can gather from this discussion is that we should treat our kids equally, right? You know, we should let the eldest sibling still be a kid and not place this heavy burden on them by saying, you're the oldest child in the family, so you need to help out. You need to take on the responsibility, which I think far too often we do that with the eldest child, because I do see it in almost all families. It's very rare that the younger sibling is more responsible than the older one.
Oh, 100%. But I also think that even now, though, I'm turning 32 and I still get babied.
Yeah.
You know, like we actually have a younger cousin who's 11 years younger than me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. He's a boy. And it's like, they don't baby him as much as they baby me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the weird part, right? So I'm like, we could have moved on now, guys. Come on. I was 11 when this kid came. Let's move. I could be the middle child. Like, let me get forgotten.
Yeah.
But it was like, they're like, no, she's the youngest girl.
Yeah. You know, you just said something that honestly, my kids have been saying this to me lately. And I was so shocked when I heard it. And, you know, and it's funny because even kids know this. So my kids go to me, my oldest one goes, Mama, I really wish that you had a child older than me. And mm-hmm. the younger one goes, yeah, and I wish you would have another baby. And I'm like, no, that shop is closed. This is not happening. But I'm like, where are you guys getting this from? And then they go, because then we could be the middle child. So I'm like, okay, well, why do you want to be the middle child? And then they go, well, then you'll forget about us. And we won't have limitations on our screen time and doing our homework on time. And, you know, you're always on top of us. And then the child's like, well, I'm the oldest. And my younger one's like, yeah, and I'm the youngest. And if we're in the middle, you would just forget about us. And I'm just like, you know, and it's funny that you said that because all of a sudden this like conversation I had with them popped up and even they know. So as parents, we got to do better. Let's not let the middle child be the forgotten child.
I actually ended up going through, I went to therapy to help figure it out because I felt like being the youngest, everyone was always in my business. Like everything I said was out there.
Mm-hmm.
So like I did therapy personally. I'm a huge advocate for therapy. Like my mental yes. health like yep. really needed it and it was great. And it actually helped me learn how to make boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard in our community, eh?
Yes,
parents and family members difficult. Don't believe in boundaries.
Oh no. What are boundaries?
It's like they will just knock down that wall and they're like, we're here.
Yeah. There's no such thing as boundaries.
Yeah, and I also like the point you made how as the youngest, everyone's so involved in your life. Like, I also feel like while being the oldest, while you're, yes, you become responsible for everyone, but you're also allowed a lot of independence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've always been given that freedom of space and time. I know when I got married and I chose to move so far away, it wasn't as much of a big deal as if when you were getting married and they were just looking for a house. It was like, it has to be in the same city as us. Right?
Yeah.
So it was like keeping the baby close, whereas like the eldest one doesn't matter where mm-hmm. they go, what they do, you know, contact, communication or not whatsoever. They're old. It's okay. She can handle it. She can do it.
You think mm-hmm. that's bad? I got to the point where they were monitoring my periods every month and they knew when my period was coming. So they would call me. They're like, did you get it? Okay. So not pregnant.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Boundaries, boundaries.
There is no such word as boundaries in Punjabi.
Yeah.
Like, you understand? Like, I haven't even told them, like, hey, are we trying? Are we not? No one's asked me this.
Yeah.
But I'm getting called up and I'm like, you got your period, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's coming today. Thanks. Like, they're my little reminders. Do you know how bad that is?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we started off as talking about like the dynamics of a family and the effect that the order in which you're born has to do
mm-hmm.
with how you turn out. But I think what I'm taking away from this is the comparison and how detrimental it is to not just the individual who's being compared constantly, but even the person you're being compared to. Because that's a lot of resentment that you're going to get, whether you want it or not, from your cousins, your siblings and whatnot. And, you know, you don't always want to be seen on this pedestal where then it puts this pressure on you to always be that way because everyone views you as such.
Doing therapy really helped,
mm-hmm.
which I think also helped me strengthening my relationship with Monica and like, Sunny and Leon, right? Because it was like all that comparison kind of like I realized I'm like, it wasn't them comparing. It wasn't Monica saying, why can't you be more like me?
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't them ever saying it.
Yeah.
So I realized I'm like, I shouldn't be villainizing them for this.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't
exactly
their control. It wasn't in their hands.
Yeah. Well, this has been such an entertaining chat and I think helpful as well in the sense that hopefully our listeners have picked up a few pointers here and there, or just heard the perspective of an older sibling versus a younger sibling and what to do and what not to do when you have multiple kids. At the end, I would just say, more important than anything else is the comparisons. They have to stop. Let's make a vow to just really stop comparing our kids. They're all great on their own and they have different personalities. And, you know, Monica and I, we talk about this all the time because her oldest is just like my youngest and my oldest is just like her youngest. So, you know, we talk about it with each other, but I think we're also still very mindful not to compare them with each other and to just let them know that they're great on their own. They all have their personalities and we have to celebrate their differences and not create this environment of where they're constantly being compared to one another. That's what I would say today's golden biscuit should be. Thank you so much, Priya, for coming on.
Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been lovely chatting with you and we'll be back next week with another topic. Thank you for listening to Roo. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at roodaraz@gmail.com. That's roohdaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.